H. Brummett versus Lee Enterprises. Mr. Baker. Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, this is the case. We are here today on a summary judgment which was granted by the trial court. Of course, the standard of review is de novo. A brief factual outline of what happened in this case. The plaintiff in the case, Tony Brummett, worked for a newspaper, the Decatur Herald, as an advertising executive, sold advertising for the Decatur Herald. Throughout his employment, Tony complained of a number of racially hostile incidents which occurred. In November of 1997, November 13th of 1997 or thereabouts, Mr. Brummett was arrested for DUI. Mr. Brummett thereafter notified, as is required by the employee policy, and I might note that this is a subject of a disagreement, issue of material fact here, notified his supervisor that he had, in fact, received a DUI. Shortly thereafter, approximately 3 or 4 weeks thereafter, a prominent individual in the Decatur community contacted the Decatur Herald, made some allegations against Mr. Brummett that he was harassing them, this prominent individual. As a result of that, Mr. Brummett's supervisors at the Decatur Herald contacted these individuals, met with these individuals, and listened to their allegations. Thereafter, Mr. Brummett was suspended pending an investigation. Now, the rationale for the suspension was that it was concerning to the Decatur Herald that they might have to print information about one of their employees who might be the subject of a criminal investigation. Now, there had previously been an incident where a reporter by the name of Valerie Wells had been arrested on charges of some drug trafficking count, and the Decatur Herald had, in fact, run an article about Ms. Wells. Now, in that particular case, Ms. Wells was allowed to take time off to clear up her legal problems. On about December 23rd, one of Mr. Brummett's supervisors contacted him at his home, told him that they wanted to come in and meet with him. He came in on January 5th, and again, he had been suspended this entire time. He was told that he was being terminated for two reasons. One, because he was told that he didn't have a driver's license, and this is critical, and there were two reasons. It wasn't an or, but there were two reasons. He didn't have a driver's license, and the fact that he hadn't reported that fact to his supervisor. Now, there are a number of factual issues about whether he did have a license and other things that were raised.
Yeah, I just want to ask one question. On the 5th of January, could he legally drive by license or permit?
No.
No.
Judge Wilkinson could not on the 5th of January.
And that's problematic for you in light of what their policy is there at the newspaper.
Well, Your Honor, I would agree with you. The problem here is, and I asked this question during the deposition, let's assume that the only claim against Mr. Brummett was that he didn't have a driver's license, what would they have done? Because, again, remember, there were two justifications for his termination. He didn't have a license, and he hadn't reported it to his immediate supervisor. Now, Tony Brummett claims that he did report it to the immediate supervisor, so we have a question of fact there. And I asked, what would happen? They said, well, we don't know. We probably would have talked about it. They even indicated they had given Mr. Brummett an opportunity to bring it up when they first had the meeting that day.
So what do you think the newspaper should have done with respect to the DUI?
Well, there are a couple of problems here, Your Honor. First of all, Mr. Brummett, during the beginning of December, had been removed from his advertising responsibilities for a period of 3 weeks to go back into circulation. Mr. Brummett also advised them. They said that he was not going to have a license for a period of 2 years. Mr. Brummett said to them, listen, my lawyer tells me that I am going to be able to get a judicial driving permit. Now, With respect to Valerie Wells, when she had her legal issues, they allowed her time off to take care of her legal issues. Mr. Brummett said, can I have some time to get this matter rectified? Their response was, no, you can't. Shortly thereafter, Mr. Brummett went into court. He received a judicial driving permit. At that point in time, he went to them. His attorney contacted them and said, look, Mr. Brummett can drive. This isn't so problematic after all. Can he have his job back? And they said no. So if they had said, if their position was, first of all, if he doesn't have a driver's license, he's terminated, then that's a perfectly legitimate explanation on their part. But the problem here is they didn't say that. They said there were two issues here. And it's an and. Both of them. He said, and this court has held repeatedly that if you list six separate incidents, we would have fired him for point A, we would have fired him for point B, we would have fired him for point C. If any one of those can be sustained, then summary judgment is appropriate. This case, however, is somewhat different because they weren't ors. If they had said we would have fired him for not reporting it, or we would have fired him for not having the license, they didn't say that. But what they said was we fired him for both of those. And one of them, there's a factual dispute on. And they can't say, based on Ms. Cooley's deposition testimony, they cannot say that had the first been established, that they would have fired him simply because he did not have a driver's license. So, you know, when you ask what should they have done, in the past they had given other employees the opportunity to clear up their legal situations. In the past, they had given other employees the opportunity to do these things, but in the past with Mr. Brummett himself, they had removed him off of circulation. Tony said to him, well, I can have somebody assist me or drive me around. Tony also said that there are long periods of time where he doesn't necessarily have to drive. So those were all things that could have been done.
So there was Dell, and were there other employees that were in that same, a similar kind of situation that were given an opportunity to clear things up? I know I read about her. Was there anybody else?
None that we discovered through discovery, Your Honor. So no. Factually, that's the only one that we have. And that raises a separate issue, and that raises the issue of should this case be analyzed using the prima facie case, or should it be analyzed using the pretext? And I would quote from the brief that they submitted initially to the trial court supporting summary judgment. It should be clear from the record that Tony Brummett was generally performing his job appropriately. In other words, Tony Brummett was functioning as an outside sales representative. And but for the loss of his license and his failure to report that to his supervisor, Tony Brummett would not have been terminated. Again, both of those things. So the trial court analyzed this within the context of the prima facie case, meaning was he meeting his employer's legitimate expectations? We argued to the trial court, and I've argued in my brief as well today, that issue should be merged with the issue of pretext and be treated together, as this court has done on repeated occasions. Of course, this court has also held the other way. But if you go on to the pretext, and I outline in my brief a number of areas that we believe establish pretext. And when the district court relied very, very strongly upon this court's holding in COCO. And in COCO, the facts in COCO aren't articulated in the opinion, or they don't go into great depth on those. But in COCO, this court, Judge Posner indicated the importance of going through the formalistic approach to McDonnell Douglas. Now, I think this case is factually different than the case was in COCO, but I also think that this is a case where, as this court has said before, the formalistic approach should be eschewed, that a different approach should be taken. And the issue of pretext the issue of whether Tony was performing according to his employer's legitimate expectations should be merged with the issue of pretext. And I believe that this court's previous rulings, as well as the rulings of the Supreme Court, have indicated that the McDonnell-Douglas framework is not something, it's an analytical tool. It is to be used to measure various cases, to look at different cases, to fit them into pigeonholes.
Yeah, but if he's not performing up to his, I don't understand, if he's not performing up to his employer's expectations, you can't use McDonnell-Douglas. You need something else.
Well,
it's obvious someone isn't performing up to his employer's expectations, he's very likely to be fired for reasons unrelated to discrimination.
Your Honor, and that might be the case in some cases, but I think here that there are differences. For example, we have stated that the issue of whether he had the license or not, our argument is that's not the real reason he was terminated, but that he was terminated because...
No, but the point is these are different, there are additional elements in the McDonnell-Douglas test. One is you have to show you're performing up to the employer's expectations. Otherwise, you can't use McDonnell-Douglas.
Well, Your Honor, but
that's what we've said. That's the law.
The court has won in a variety of different areas.
It has, and it's been very explicit. That's the Coco case, which you mentioned. It makes clear, you know, and it's just repeating what's been in the previous cases, going back to McDonnell-Douglas. That's one of the threshold requirements.
Judge Posner, the Coco case, and there are distinctions here, but with respect to the Coco case itself, if you take the analysis of the Coco case, that you must be performing according to...
It just doesn't make any sense. Look, if you can prove discrimination, you can prove discrimination, but if you want to use McDonnell-Douglas, which doesn't require any proof of discrimination, you have to jump through a few hoops.
That is correct, Your Honor, and oftentimes, with the issue of legitimate expectations, it has been merged with the issue of pretext.
No, forget the merger. There's no reason to merge it. Look, all you have is he has a job which requires driving, and he's not allowed to drive for 2 years, so they fire him. Now, there could be discrimination, of course, underlying it, but it's not a sufficiently suspicious circumstance to trigger McDonnell-Douglas, which, you know, shifts all sorts of burdens to the defendant.
Your Honor, with respect to that issue...
You're disagreeing with what the law is.
Well, I guess I would say, with due respect to Your Honor, I'm disagreeing with Coco to a certain extent. Because if you take Coco,
you're disagreeing with McDonnell-Douglas.
Well, I don't...
You might have a proposal that we just not follow McDonnell-Douglas here in the Seventh Circuit. I've made that proposal myself, but there is this little obligation for courts of appeals to follow the Supreme Court.
And Judge Easterbrook, I do understand that, and I do understand what McDonnell-Douglas says and the rules outlining what is involved in McDonnell-Douglas. However, if you take Coco and you could say you have two employees, one Caucasian, one African American. The Caucasian employee misses 3 days worth of work with no call, no show, no call, and no discipline.
But you see, what you're trying to do, you have a worker who's not qualified for the job. So then what you want to do, you want to go through the employer's records and try to find some other employee who the company somehow neglected to fire for a similar offense. And if that person happens to be of a different race or sex or something, then you think you have a prima facie case. That isn't enough.
Well,
employers don't act with complete uniformity. So the fact that you can find one employee who is deprived of driving permit, deprived of her license but not fired, doesn't show anything.
If I could...
And how many other employees have been discharged because their driver's license were taken away?
Your Honor, as far as the issue of whether a driver's license...
What's your answer?
Zero that I know of.
What do you mean that you know of? Is that what you're saying? Is evidence that this person is the only person who's ever been fired for losing his driver's license?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Asked the company that, and they said they'd never done it before. Is that what you're saying?
The company researched their records, Your Honor, I believe, during discovery, and I believe that issue came up during the depositions. Mr. Hughes, of course, will tell you if I'm incorrect. I believe that is what was discovered during discovery. Now, how far back the company went, again, I don't recall specifically how far back we asked for, and again, how far back they are required to provide that information. But again, I want to get back to my essential point. If they had said, we are firing him because he doesn't have a driver's license or he can't drive an automobile, then that would be one thing. But they haven't said that. They said, we are firing him because he didn't tell us about it and because he doesn't have a driver's license. Not either or. Not we would have, they'd ever have once said.
How does that get you over your need for a prima facie case of discrimination?
Well, the prima facie case is whether he is performing according to his to the legitimate expectations. And
a legitimate expectation is that he would drive and that he would be qualified, that he would be able to drive. And when they let him go, he couldn't drive. And, in fact, it was three weeks before he got that permit?
It was, yes, approximately about that amount of time.
So that's your problem.
Well, again, whether, you know, I guess I'm kind of going back and forth between the various issues which have been raised. I do see that my time is up.
Time expired. Thank you. Mr. Hughes?
Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mr. Baker. In this case, there was neither direct evidence of discrimination nor sufficient indirect evidence under the McDonnell-Douglas approach to justify submission of this case to the trier of fact, period. There simply was not any evidence.
Well, he made two points. One is that he was fired for these two reasons, one of which is disputable, and the other, his other argument is that a woman was, and similarly situated, was treated more favorably. So you want to comment on those?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. First, either reason is sufficient. And the loss of a license where there is a clear, unambiguous, if you will, colorblind policy about which Mr. Brummett had been warned on at least one occasion, i.e., if you violate this policy,
well,
you will lose your job.
Second point, it wasn't colorblind because this woman, Bell, or whatever her name was not, was spared.
There's no comparability between the situations, Your Honor. First of all, Valerie Wells was not a reporter. Valerie Wells was a clerk in records department. Secondly, Valerie Wells' situation didn't involve any aspect of her work which was immediately critical to her work. In other words, that didn't have anything to do with a driver's license for an employee who had to drive.
Well, why did you rely on the Secretary of State's office instead of waiting to hear how Brummett fared in court? I mean,
well,
he had told your people that his lawyer was going there. He anticipated that it was not going to be a problem in terms of it being a permanent situation.
May I, Your Honor, finish my address to Judge Posner
right.
First. I apologize, but this, I think, is a very important point. The Valerie Wells situation is not at all comparable. There is no aspect of Valerie Wells' situation which involves the basic performance of her job. In other words, Valerie Wells was perfectly capable of continuing on in her employment once she resolved it was a drug arrest, which subsequently resulted in a dismissal of charges. There is no comparability. In fact, what Valerie Wells proves is exactly what we said all along. The arrest is not an operative factor. In other words, Mr. Brummett was arrested for actually three charges. If we wanted to fire him on some kind of a pretext, we could have picked any one or all of the three. Mr. Brummett was fired because he actually lost his license. Now, in addressing your question, Judge Williams, it is this. The fact is that counsel omitted, in his presentation of the facts, to point out that this was a summary suspension. In other words, we called the Secretary of State's office, reasonably relied on that, and by the way, that information proved to be substantially true. What happened is Mr. Brummett refused to do the breathalyzer test in the state of Illinois. That's a summary suspension. It's an automatic suspension of license for 6 months. That is what happened to Mr. Brummett. Counsel has pointed out in his brief many times, gee, you know, he didn't lose his license for 2 years. But is that really the operative fact here, or is the operative fact the fact that he lost his license, which is in fact the case? He lost his license for a minimum of 6 months because he refused to take the test. He was disqualified from acting on behalf of his employer during that time. And I submit to the court, and we say this in our brief, I'll say it again, what Mr. Brummett wanted was not to be treated equally. What Mr. Brummett wanted was special treatment. He wanted to be able to have somebody drive him around on the job. Well, the Decatur Herald Review has no obligation to allow that, and if you follow that through to its logical conclusion, we don't have any control over who that person might be. Are they a good qualified driver? Do they have insurance? These are questions that go way beyond the pale of what any employer should be required to do. Or in the alternative, he suggests seemingly, well, gee, I ought to be able to take time off from my job in the circulation department while I get these things straightened out, or and work in the circulation while I get these things straightened out. There is no obligation on the part of the Herald and Review to accommodate that, first of all. And secondly, that that implies that his job in sales, I mean, why do we have him in sales if we can just shift him around at our leisure? The answer is he needs to do his job in sales. At the employer's request, he did take a short period of time where he went back into circulation to fill an emergency slot, but he was to come right back into sales. And during that interim period of time, what Mr. Brummett seems to suggest is, gee, my coworkers in the sales department should have to make up my share of the work because I've gone out and partied too hard and gotten a DUI. Your Honor, that's not required. It is not logical. What he is asking is...
What about the argument that you fired him because of the license suspension plus his not having disclosed it to his supervisor?
Well, I think either one of those is a perfectly valid reason, Your Honor.
Yeah, but his argument is that it's not or, it was both.
I disagree with that.
And
I mean, what he's relying on is a twist of semantics, not a reality. If you look, Your Honor, at the facts in this case, which are very clear, the Decatur Herald Review had an employee manual which clearly made it mandatory for people who drive to have a valid driver's license and a good driving record. Clearly published, Mr. Brummett in his deposition clearly acknowledged that he was well aware of that and acknowledged that this was, in effect, a very valid requirement for someone in his position. So we not only have a clear, well-established policy, we have communication and acknowledgement by the employee of that, and we have violation of that.
But what he's saying is that there's a material dispute concerning whether or not he gave the company notice of the DUI.
Well,
that's a material dispute. That's that second reason.
If I may, I'll step forward a little bit. Your Honor, one of the questions here is then, I guess, could we satisfy our obligation under the question of pretext if a prima facie case is made? And the answer is absolutely yes. What you have here is, according to the plaintiff, and understand this is disputed, according to the plaintiff, what he did was he told his then-supervisor, Fred Hubry, that he had gotten this DUI. Now, the problem with the plaintiff's theory is manifest. I mean, it's just obvious. According to the plaintiff, Fred Hubry had it in for Mr. Brummett. He didn't like him, wanted to do him in. So what did Mr. Hubry do in order to carry out this diabolical plot? He just ignored the fact that Mr. Brummett had a DUI and waited until somebody discovered that by pure happenstance? No, quite frankly, if Mr. Hubry had it in for Mr. Brummett, why didn't he just go forward right away and say, hey, Tony's lost his license. He can't work here anymore. This is conjecture, it's speculation. It cannot possibly be a basis for countering the facts in a motion for summary judgment. There's just no support for that at all. I want to address it again, if I may, Your Honor, what I call the Fred Hubry theory just doesn't hold water. And I want to point something else out too. And I think this is very important under the court's analysis in a number of cases. Understand, Mr. Hubry had no role whatsoever in the decision to fire Mr. Brummett. If anything, he was the messenger or non-messenger, but he had no role in this. So, as an example, counsel in his brief cites to an incident that took place in a bus outing. The fact is, Mr. Hubry had no role in the decision to fire Mr. Brummett, and therefore he falls under kind of a Fuca, I believe is the name of the case, type of analysis where there is still no evidence of discrimination. Counsel alluded to what I refer to as the Sean Streety theory. In other words, we wanted to fire Mr. Brummett because he had a run-in with another person in Decatur. Well, the trouble with the Sean Streety theory is several things. Primarily...
Well, but that wouldn't have anything to do with race. I don't understand how that got into the case.
That was my argument, Your Honor. It doesn't have anything to do with race. What Mr. Brummett has done is he's looked over a several-year employment history and he's tried to pick out a number of incidents which he thinks show racial animus, but none of which have any relation whatsoever to the decision to terminate his employment. The decision to terminate his employment was based upon a clearly articulated, well understood, well accepted, legitimate expectation of the employer that the personnel who are required to drive a vehicle will in fact be licensed to do so and have good driving records. You know, the concept of respondeat superior makes this type of precaution an absolute mandatory condition on the part of employers who have people who drive for them. And to point out to the court, it's right in the record, every year the Decatur Herald and Review goes through a record search of all of those personnel who are deemed to be required to have driver's license to verify that those personnel have a valid driver's license. This is not a casual interest on the part of an employer. This is clearly a legitimate expectation. Judge McCuskey's order determining that the plaintiff had failed to meet the employer's legitimate expectations is absolutely correct. I don't think there can be any question about it. I think that there are, I think that if I will, in Judge Easterbrook's comments in the Gordon case, we find in here, his statement is something to the effect that with all these many employees and all these many rules and regulations, we can always make a factual case. And there will always be questions that can be raised. But the real question before this court, and I think it's the question in the analysis of the COCO case, is can this case get to a trier of fact? Is there a basis for that? And the answer is no. This employee was terminated because he did not maintain his driver's license, one of the fundamental requirements, a legitimate expectation of his employer. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel.